This is Decoding Security, a podcast from Microsoft Australia about how to protect your business from the ever-changing threat of cybercrime. On the show, you'll hear from leaders in cybersecurity as well as Microsoft experts as we break down strategies to help keep your business secure. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, and I'm the Chief Security Officer here at Microsoft Australia. In today's episode, you'll hear from Sandro Buccaneri, the Group Chief Security Officer at NAB. Sandro will be joined by Antoinette Jago, a security solutions expert at Microsoft, to discuss risk response. You'll hear where the risk function sits in this ever-changing world, how risk management roles fit into organizations, and we'll share a few tips on how to monitor risks after they've been responded to. Let's go over to Antoinette to start the conversation.
Sandro, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Antoinette.
Thanks very much for joining me today. I know you're a very busy man, so I appreciate your time. And I'm not going to waste any of your time. We're going to jump straight in. The previous series has touched on a lot of different areas within risk. But before we begin, I'd love to understand what you consider risk to be, just so we have a level playing field to base off.
Yes, a risk is different things to different people. The way I view risk is very different to how you view risk. And just so like with our business, it all comes down to our risk appetite of an organization and how we ultimately mitigate those risks that we are faced with.
In terms of the situation that we're in, this world is ever changing and our risk measures are changing too. Where is the natural fit for risks to sit in your organization? I'm sure it's not solely the responsibility of IT.
No, for sure. So we typically follow the three lines of defense. So the business and enabling functions in our organization, for example, is line one. We've got a second line of defense, which is our independent risk function, which basically checks that we are doing what we are doing from a risk management perspective is on par. And then our third line of defense is essentially our internal audit function.
That's really great. And in terms of those three lines of defense, does everybody have a different piece of responsibility within those lines?
Yeah, we do. So line one is which way I sit. So my security function sits in line one. Now, we're fundamentally accountable for risk management, particularly the bare accountable person that sits under the bare scheme, which is the banking executive accountability regime. Second line is essentially the assurance ability, making sure that we are doing what we say we are doing. And then, like I mentioned, the internal audit that basically ticks all the boxes to make sure that it all fits together.
And with those three lines of defense, is there a point in time where you decide to accept risk and then begin a process to mitigate and potentially even transfer as you move through that process?
Yeah, so we go through the whole process of identifying the risk, assessing it, and managing the relevant risk to see if our controls meet the criteria to help mitigate it. And then we could either transfer that risk to insurance or whatever the case may be, and then constantly monitor and report on it. And that's essentially our risk methodology as to how everything fits together.
That's actually a really interesting point there that you raise about digging into it a bit more and continuing to monitor after the fact. So once a risk has been mitigated, how do you report back on, yes, okay, it's been mitigated and now we're going to continue this process from here? Is that something that you share with your board? Is it something that you have to share externally?
Yeah, so we have responsibility from a regulatory perspective to share that externally, but it all comes down to metrics and measurements on what our risk appetite is for the organization. And everyone is different. If I use a simple example, when you walk across the street, you can just walk across the street without looking. That's not advisable. But, you know, you look at all the different factors around you. Is there oncoming traffic? Is it a quiet street? Is it raining? And all those kind of things. So you look at all those concepts and you apply the different risk metrics to it. And that's how we constantly monitor our environment.
Yeah, no, that's a really good analogy. I quite like that. I'm probably going to just dig into that a little bit more because people that will be listening in today will be from a collection of different organizations and industries. In terms of key metrics and performance indicators, do you have any tips for people that are building out these type of maturity models?
So I can't share specific metrics. I'll talk about from a security perspective, right? So I always talk in dwell time, the time an attacker gets into your environment to the time that you actually detect them. Now, globally, that average has come down over the years. It originally used to be 180 days, and then it used to move down. So now I think it's sitting on 55 days, which is still a lot of time that somebody can be poking around on your environment without you knowing that they're there. So that's the biggest metric that I use. And then there's lots of smaller metrics that feeds into that and how we mitigate that. But the dwell time is a good reference point to see, are you actually managing your environment well or not? That then gets reported up to the various committees, ultimately to the executive committee and then onto board. and then ultimately to our regulators as well. So just to show that how we are managing our security environment as a whole.
Super interesting. And thank you for sharing such detail. So throughout the conversation, we've touched on a couple of different pieces, risk response, risk mitigation, and continued monitoring. One thing I would like to ask you a little bit more about is around collaboration and how you guys collaborate directly with government. Is that something that you could share with us?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a massive fan of collaboration. I'm also the old adage of, no, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And from a security perspective, that's exceptionally important. I think one of the key things that we need to do is collaborate more, because that's what the adversaries are doing. If I were a bad guy, I would come to you and say, hey, Antoinette, I've got a target that I'm focusing on. Your cut of the take would be 5 to 10%. Are you in? It's a very binary, very black and white yes or no answer. It's not, oh, wait, let me go through this change management forum. Let me get this approval. Let me get that approval, et cetera. And then maybe I'll come back to you in 3 weeks' time. No, it's very direct, which is why we are losing so much money to the criminals. Collaboration is exceptionally important. So threat intelligence sharing is a big one. That's why there is the Clean Pipes initiative that's set up already. We have the Strategic Banking Alliance. We're working with larger banks out there that we're trying to work closely with. And these are all in to help us in the fight against these adversaries. If anybody's out there that wants to reach out and wants to collaborate more, it doesn't matter which region you're in, because we need data from everywhere, not just Australia, not just Africa, not just America. We need data from everywhere to help better defend against this constant threat that we are under. That would be great. So yeah, collaboration, I'm all supportive of it.
I was doing a little bit of background and I see that you run an academy and that you're very into learning and reflection. If you could go back and speak to your younger self about building your risk framework, what are the things that you would be telling yourself to bear in mind in doing that?
Yeah, look, I think the big one for me would be listen to the business. That's probably the key one, simply because, you know, the business, just like you and I have a job to do, they have to make sure that the business is moving forward. And if you're putting in crazy policies and crazy requirements for them to meet, and they can't meet it and they can't meet their goals as a business, they'll go around you. They'll find ways around you and your policies. And that's where the shadow IT functions come in, the shadow HR, shadow finance, etc. So I think that's probably the biggest piece of advice I would give myself, is that listen to the business, try to understand what it is they do. And if you can understand them first and foremost, that goes a long way in helping them achieve their goals. But at the end of the day, we are enabling units. We are enabling function. We need to enable them to be successful, not be a blocker. Other hints and tips? Yeah, meditation, I would have wanted to do a long time ago. It's exceptionally important to bring the stress level down. And I think go to the gym. That's the other one.
Perfect. It actually lines up, interestingly, very much with Satya's motto. Security is like going to the gym, actually. He says, we must go every day to stay fit. It's not something that we can just do once a week. So I love that analogy of going to the gym. I don't think it was your intent, though. Tell me a little bit more about that second piece that you just tapped into around serving the business. How do you get to know those players and what's important to them so that you are managing risk for them?
I think it's having the relationship and building the relationship with the business leaders, setting up time, either informally or through formal channels when you're going through those committees, etc., having those conversations to try and understand what it is they do. If you think of our business bank, for example, they are trying to service our customers, our small to medium businesses who are trying to make ends meet. If I think back to my consulting days, security for my businesses was all about, I don't care about it, simply because it's not making me sell more cans of beans, selling more cups of coffee. But it's exceptionally important, because when you get breached, your business essentially goes out of business. So I think it's important to understand what it is your business is into, what they are doing, what they are trying to achieve, and then giving them the baseline of, you know, it's great that you guys are trying to do A, B, and C, but if you go down this path, this is what the outcome will be, but rather do this instead with these mitigating controls in place, it will help you achieve the same goal. So it's basically giving options. It's the same principle in life. If I give you an option, if I put two plates of food in front of you, you can choose either one. One might be delicious and the other one might not. So it's all about the choice and how you present it to the business.
I love that. Absolutely love the analogy. It's super interesting and as well just brings in the theme around, even when I look back on your career, you've built such strong industry expertise. And I would imagine that that just plays into every conversation, giving you that understanding and just building on it time and time again. So it's fantastic. Just there when we were speaking, you were just speaking about the academy briefly. I'd love to hear a little bit more about it and the general background, where it's come from. Also a little bit about your learning philosophy. That'd be great to dig into that one.
The academy is something that I'm very passionate about. I always believe in giving back. in no small part to my wife, who's always pushed me to do that. So a couple of years, we moved back to South Africa. And that was one of the main reasons for moving back, was to give back. So what I noticed was that the youth of South Africa, you know, there's a massive unemployment rate. 18 to 24 year olds is about a 55% unemployment rate at the time. That's shot up to, you know, well over 60% now. And you know, most of these kids are sitting on the street corners, drinking, gangsterism, drugs, all those kind of things, which is not great. And the big thing for me was to give youth hope. So what we did was we partnered with the Maharishi Institute, which is a free university in South Africa. And they were doing something similar already. Over the last 19 years, they've trained 19,000 young people in university degree programs, which is fantastic. So we partnered with them to help set up the Cybersecurity Academy in taking 24 marginalized youth through the program. It initially started off as a one-year program, which quickly grew to a three-year program. There are several cohorts that is now set up following on from that. Those students that were in the first year back in 2019 are now in their final year, and there's 24 of them. But the best thing out of all of it is that 70% of those 24 is female talent, which is amazing for cybersecurity specifically, because we have a massive diversity problem. And a good friend of mine, Jane Franklin, always says, women are very different to men and they view risk differently, which is important. So I'm a massive supporter of our diversity programs, and the Academy is there to help with that. So we've worked with larger partners in the past. The World Economic Forum is a big supporter of it. And the model of the Academy is essentially a cookie cutter approach. So you can take the way the model itself and plonk it into any country around the world. Just before I left, we were working with Kenya to get it set up there, with Rwanda as well. And I would love to do something in Australia. And I know there are several academies around as well, but I'm happy to collaborate as we see fit. But yeah, that's in a nutshell what the Academy is about.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I want to thank you as well for driving such diversity in our industry. It's absolutely phenomenal. As I sit back and listen to those statistics and the opportunity that you're providing, it is brilliant. And we definitely love to see how we can partner together in Australia. Community is definitely at the heart of everything that we like to do here. Cyber can't get enough people. We need people in the industry. So it'll be fantastic. I know we're short on time, so I'm going to wrap us up here. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a really enjoyable conversation.
Thank you, Antoinette.
You've been listening to Decoding Security, a show about how to protect your business from the ever-changing threat of cybercrime. This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Australia. Microsoft Australia provides a comprehensive suite of end-to-end security solutions unified across people, devices, apps, and data. For more information, visit the website microsoft.com/decodingsecurity. This podcast was made with strategy and production support from Wavelength Creative. To make sure you don't miss an episode of Decoding Security, be sure to subscribe to or follow the show in your podcast app. And while you're there, leave us a 5-star review. It really helps others find the show. I'm Mark Anderson, and we'll be back next episode with more Decoding Security.